I'd like now to welcome Dr. Sydney Golub. He's a cancer immunologist, bioethicist. He's head of the UC Irvine Human Stem Cell Research Oversight Committee. And he will be speaking tonight at 7:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
So stem cells are sometimes very controversial here in the United States of America. What are they?
Well, they're controversial in other places as well. And why they're controversial and what they are related issues. There's different kinds of stem cells. Stem cells are cells that generate another cell. So it's a metaphor for a cell from which other cells develop. And we have stem cells that renew parts of our body every day. And we have a very special kind of stem cell that's of great interest to scientists called pluripotent stem cells, cells that can make almost any cell type. And so the controversy has been mostly about those pluripotent stem cells, cells that we can use as a kind of repair kit for any cell of the body. You need a heart cell, we can make a heart cell out of it. You need a nerve cell, we can make a nerve cell.
Let's talk about regular cells for a moment that aren't stem cells. Okay, I've got in the palm of my hand a bunch of tissue. I cut myself, it regenerates. Does it need stem cells to regenerate?
Yes, it does. And that's been something we've appreciated scientifically over the past couple decades, how important stem cells are in normal tissue repair. So that when you cut your hand, instead of those already completely mature skin cells that are kind of lined up in columns on your skin, making more of themselves, instead you go deeper into the skin to a small cell whose job it is to wait around until you need more skin cells. And those cells multiply, and then those multiplied cells become skin cells. So you've got a kind of ready-made repository of tissue-specific stem cells, of cells that can only make skin, that are available whenever you need them.
And they have some mechanism by which they know when it's time to make some more.
There are biochemical signals that they're needed, biochemical signals that repair is needed because the cells are damaged and the body senses that need. And that's true in a variety of tissues. And so there are neural stem cells that can replace slowly damaged neurons in the brain. There are muscle skin cells, the intestinal skin cells, bone marrow stem cells.
So they're all just waiting around to do their job. And I mean, you are a cancer researcher. Are those the cells that if they go crazy, you start to get over reproduction and that turns into tumors? Or
that's a fairly complicated story, but there is a growing belief among cancer scientists in what we call cancer stem cells, cancer cells that have broad possibilities of becoming more malignant. But that's a kind of separate sub-discipline of the stem cell field.
Well, we'll go there another time. Meanwhile, let's talk about these pluripotent stem cells. Are those the stem cells that are in, I mean, when you have a conceived egg and a zygote that start to, I mean, you start out as just a few cells and then it makes a whole entire body.
Yes, exactly. So the zygote, the fertilized egg, is the ultimate pluripotent stem cell. It can make a whole body. Most of the ones used experimentally come from in vitro fertilization clinics where eggs are fertilized with sperm and they get maybe 20 embryos, 10, 15, 20 embryos, 20 zygotes, and develop them for 4 or 5 days outside the body. And they'll develop to about 100, 150 cell stage.
So they're very, very small.
If you took a dime and looked at the groove across a dime, you could line up 10 or 15 of them in a groove. They're very, very small. They only have two cell types, one cell that's the pluripotent stem cell, another cell type that's dedicated to making, when necessary, a placenta. So the pluripotent stem cells are within these 4 or 5 day post-fertilization structures. The technical term for them is a blastocyst.
So one set of cells makes the person, the other makes the house that it's going to live in for the next 9 months.
Exactly.
Okay, so does science understand at this point the mechanisms by which those 100 little cells then turn into, I mean, one's a brain, one's a gallbladder, one's your left foot?
We understand some parts of it, and stem cells and the use of these stem cells in research has been enormously helpful in understanding more and more of the basic mechanisms. We know there are a small number of genes involved that control how the stem cell recognizes the world and how it begins to say, we need a specialized cell, we need a nerve cell now, we need a muscle cell. There are a small number of controlling genes. We've got, in the human body, we've got maybe 35,000 genes. All of them make the body, but a couple of them tell them which to make now, which ones to turn on now.
And those have a tremendous role during human development.
Exactly.
And then their job is done?
Well, we don't know whether the job is done. Some of them are very important in other functions. They're usually important in growth functions because cells have to grow and reproduce. And these genes, control those functions.
So what so far are the medical benefits, if any, of stem cell research? Are there any treatments that have come from stem cell research, or is it still in a kind of nascent stage?
Well, it's all over from extremely valuable, already proven, to cutting edge, just happening now. The established ones are these tissue-specific ones. The best example is bone marrow. So bone marrow transplants have been around for decades. Those bone marrow transplants save lives. They're very useful in chemotherapy-induced depletion of the bone marrow, in cancer treatment, in various kinds of anemias, other blood diseases. They're essential. They're life-saving.
So when you have a bone marrow transplant, you're taking stem cells from one person and putting them into another person.
Precisely. You've got it exactly. It's a stem cell transplant, a bone marrow transplant. But bone marrow transplants are good for replacing blood cells, the blood cell making cells. But they're limited in general to those. The pluripotent stem cells are now being tested for a whole variety of other disease treatments. There are clinical trials underway right now for the use of these embryonic-derived stem cells for the treatment of macular degeneration, for the treatment of ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or Lou Gehrig's disease. There are related ones derived from a little later, kind of from fetal cells, being used for spinal cord injury clinical trials. So there are clinical experiments being done right now to treat patients with disease with stem cells.
We're talking to Dr. Sidney Golub. Now, here's the big question is, why is there so much protest against this?
Well, it derives largely, there are a lot of ethical issues, let me put it that way. There's a list of ones, and the scientific community and the society has tried to grapple with some of them. The most central one, and the hardest one to get any kind of consensus on, is the issue that we can call the moral status of the embryo. With that fertilized egg, what's its moral status? If it was destined to die anyway, if it was destined to be discarded, are we doing something appropriate by taking it and instead converting it to medical use? Or if it was destined to become a person, have we committed some awful crime? And that's the struggle that people have.
Now, there's a lot of people, for example, who do in vitro fertilization, and a bunch of eggs get fertilized, one or two of them get implanted, one of them takes, you have a nice little baby. What happens to the rest of them normally?
Well, what happens to the rest of them normally is that they're stored because they can be frozen at extremely low temperatures in liquid nitrogen. And those stored ones are generally kept until the family has said, we no longer need them. We don't need these anymore. After a couple of years, there's usually a fairly substantial charge for storage. So families say, you know, we've had the kids, we don't need to be paying this charge anymore. What happens then is they're ordinarily discarded. And so they're destined to be destroyed. There have been surveys of IVF clinic patients asking them what do they want to do, and two-thirds of them would like to donate them to some good purpose. And stem cell research is frequently cited as a good purpose for using those.
And the opponents, who probably have about 100% overlap with anti-abortion political beliefs, what do they think should be done with them?
Some of them have advocated all of them should be adopted. I think that's not a realistic solution. But I do want to say the overlap is not 100%. There is a very clear group of people who feel that stem cell research is compatible with their strong anti-abortion views. And that's been manifested politically as well as moral beliefs. I have never heard somebody who has said, I think choice on abortion is okay and I'm opposed to stem cells. So it's a one-way relationship. But there is large overlap with the anti-abortion feelings, but it's not complete.
So that is one set of ethical issues, but there are many more which probably capture the imaginations of science fiction writers and everything else, having to do with cloning and so on.
Cloning is the one that has captured a lot of public interest, science fiction interest, and sometimes political interest, because the technology that cloning uses can also be used in stem cell research. And up until quite recently, that was a theoretical possibility. But a research group in Oregon published this year that it is possible to do it with human eggs and human DNA, or human nucleus of an adult cell. So you can do the cloning experiment, in which you take a human egg from a woman donating an egg, remove the nucleus from her egg, and implant an adult nucleus from an adult cell, a skin cell. And that cell can be induced to start dividing and to make one of these blastocysts, one of these early embryos, from which you can derive stem cells. If you derive the stem cells that way, the genetics of that stem cell is the genetics of the donor of the nucleus. So it could be used, theoretically, to make a custom-designed stem cell. If I'm a patient with, let's say, Parkinson's disease, you could use my nucleus, generate a stem cell that had my DNA, my genetic background, from which we could make a nerve cell to replace the damaged cells.
Or a kidney to replace your failed kidney.
There's a group in Japan who just published making a whole retina from stem cells. So you can make whole tissues.
Could I take one of my eggs, implant one of my nuclei, put it in my uterus, and have a me?
I don't know. And the answer is it's unlikely to succeed. Cloning for reproductive purposes is extremely inefficient. Even under the very best of circumstances, it's well under 1%. So you'd have to try it 100 times to have a shot, which is something you probably don't want to do for your own health. The National Academy of Sciences held a conference on this, and their conclusion was it's dangerous and likely to fail. So there's no reason to do it that way.
Right, but this is where you get into the sci-fi aspects.
Yeah.
And, I mean, anything that is inefficient now might be highly efficient 30 years from now.
And you can ask, why would you want to clone somebody? The notion that if you cloned a warrior that you'll get a product that's a warrior assumes that those kinds of traits you're looking for are in the nuclear DNA and not in the upbringing.
Right. And that's hours and hours of conversation can come from that. The benefits, namely being able to make tissue that can be used, healthy tissue that can be used to replace unhealthy tissue in the human body, sounds like something that, if that technology were available, almost anybody would probably want to do it, ethics aside.
You know, I liken it to in vitro fertilization. which if we'd asked in advance, do we want to do this, there would have been a great debate. But it was done in England, and it was announced we have what was then called a test tube baby. And childless couples from around the world said, yeah, I'm in line. And the debate, the ethical debate, ended there. I think that to some degree, results will dictate the societal attitudes. If you can cure diabetes, if you can cure Parkinson's disease, if you can make spinal cord injured victims able to get up out of their wheelchair, I think the ethics follows those results.
You're a cancer immunologist. What kind of possibilities of cancer treatment are you looking at with stem cell research?
That's a really interesting question. And in the California structure, we have a state agency dedicated to stem cell research. And the voters of California gave us a very generous $3 billion fund to do stem cell research. And one area that is specifically identified as important is cancer research. And right now we're still trying to figure the answer to that. It's going to be complicated, but some very inventive people are working on it. And there are several ways you can do it. You can try to manipulate the cancer cell using stem cells, or you can try to manipulate the immune response to cancer, which I think is probably the more likely. But it's still in the very experimental stage, and I don't want to promise anything there.
Right, right. What are the most, in your view, really serious ethical issues about stem cell research at this point?
Well, I think there's some really interesting emerging ones. There's been a lot of discussion of the cloning and the embryo status, but I think there are emerging ones that are really interesting. One is stem cells can be used to make gametes. You can make sperm, you can make eggs from stem cells. We have to figure out, do we want to do that? Is that appropriate? Is that something that makes sense to do, and in what circumstances? There's these stem cell treatments that are coming on the horizon are likely to be very expensive. Anything that involves growing cells and then putting them into people is very laborious, a lot of regulatory hurdles. It's tricky to do. There are important issues about access to them. Who's going to have access to these therapies? How do we manage that transition? And then there are important issues about animal use. Human cells in animals, animal cells in humans through the stem cell field.
Are you going to make a lizard person?
Yes. Are we going to recreate the island of Dr. Mora? And that's been worried about by science fiction writers since Jules Verne. I think that there are interesting, important issues to think through there. We have tended to focus on the two big ones of the status of the embryo and the clones. But I think there's a lot of very important ones.
How important do you think it is for the general public? I mean, you're a scientist, and there's a lot of things we would all of our listeners would have to take years of graduate courses in medicine and physiology and so on to even understand what it is that you do every day, which isn't going to happen. So how important is it for the general public to understand these issues around stem cells?
Well, I think it's very important, and I applaud you for being one of those who presents opportunities for the public to hear and discuss these issues. It's a hard thing to have a political campaign about, but it's been done. We did have an election in California that focused on it. There have been several other states that have had referenda relating to stem cell research, in which the scientific issues got aired, sometimes in a distorted way, but often in an appropriate discussion of what the issues are. And society has to have a role in this. I'm a scientist, but I don't want scientists alone making these decisions. It's got to be a societal consensus that some things are appropriate to do. I do want to mention that the reason we have a committee like the one I chair, and we're required to by state law in California, to have every stem cell project that uses human cells has to be reviewed by a committee that includes public members and stem cell scientists and people from outside our institution to review, is it an appropriate experiment? It's an experiment that we can do, is an experiment we want to do. I think it's important to have a lot of public input into this.
One of the things that I think puts another spin on the entire debate is that at this point, you guys are coming up with these pluripotent stem cells that can make any kind of tissue that aren't coming from embryos. Is that correct?
Yes. In fact, Professor Yamanaka from Japan won the Nobel Prize last year for showing that it could be done. His experiment was done about 5 or 7 years ago, I think. It is possible to take a normal adult cell, like a skin cell, and manipulate about 4 genes in that cell and make it act as if it's a stem cell. Now, and that's an extraordinarily exciting opportunity. And about 20% now in a few years, about 20% of all scientific publications about pluripotent stem cells use this technique. There are problems with it. It's not perfect. It's not nearly as efficient as the embryonic cells. One of the genes that's manipulated is a gene that has a lot of effects on cancer, and there are safety issues, but it's an important breakthrough. So there's enormous research. I do want to emphasize, to explore those, we couldn't explore those without having done the embryonic work that lays out the pathways to study. So these fields are closely aligned.
Dr. Sidney Golub is a cancer immunologist and bioethicist. He's chair of the UC Irvine Human Stem Cell Research Oversight Committee. And once again, he will be speaking tonight at 7:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation here in Santa Fe. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte. It was a pleasure.